Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
We just finished the top of 28, so we're now on 17 to 20. Do we read the verses?
Yes.
We read the verses. In verses 17 to 19, the Lord describes the material creations, which is temporary and full of miseries. While in verses 20 to 22, he describes his own abode, which is eternal and blissful. In this way, he wants to break our attachment to matter and at the same time invoke our desire to go back to Godhead, right? Because you always have these two things. There's one is our distraction into the material world that we're trying to break. You know, so there's various ways that that's being done. By analyzing it, by pointing out the fault in it, you know, whatever it may be. And then you have the others attracting to Krishna's abode. So that's ultimately what you're trying to do. But because we are so attached to the material, that has to be worked on. So it becomes a major element. If you can just become attracted to Krishna and not even worry about the material world, it's already done. But generally speaking, is, you know, that's why we're here, because we haven't done that. So then through the process of hearing both of these, then one becomes more inspired. Verses 17 to 19, the material world. Lord describes the unfortunate material situation as follows. Brahma's day is 1,000 human ages. His night has the same duration. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living beings become manifest from the unmanifest stage. When night falls, they are merged back. Again and again, when Brahma's day arises, all living entities come into being. And at the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Right? So now he says, oh. Yeah, but this annihilation doesn't mean that the jiva is, it just means his conception of who he is, you know, that material form, that's annihilated, right? So this becomes manifest, right, from the unmanifest. So technically the mahat, that's unmanifest, right? Because that's the Vasudeva Sattva, it's like the pure goodness. But at the same time as the soul, still has polluted consciousness. They still think I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that will be the difference there. So he's on that platform. So he's not involved in material creation. But then, with Brahma's day, then there's the manifestation of the world. So then the secondary creation is manifest. So from that primary creation, he is transferred into the secondary. So he has the form. So then he's involved in this world of the adiatmak, adidayanak, and adibhautik. And so that goes on until then that becomes destroyed. Right? So the universal form, that remains. And the soul, his adiatma, that remains. So what the adibhautik is destroyed. Right? So what you see, everything, the body and everything that's about, those are all destroyed. And then one goes back into that unmanifest state. And then from there, then one, you know, that's the night, and then the day it comes again. So it just goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Yes?
So it says that Brahma's day is 1,000 human ages. So we as jiva, our material conditioning is somehow annihilated and created again 1,000 times during the day. So what's the difference between that and then going to Brahma's night and back to Brahma's day? Do you understand?
means it's happening on a small scale. But you're immediately going from one life to the next to the next. But in here, then, it's like, you know, you get 1,000 ages of sleep.
Okay.
You
so
know, to recover.
Do I change my karma? Or?
No, nothing to the karma. Karma doesn't change at all. It's just exactly, you know, it's just like you step out of it, and then when you step back, you know what I'm saying?
Same thing.
Yeah, it's the same old thing. That's because it's always the same thing. That's what Narad Muni we see in the, I think it's in the fourth chapter of the first canto. Then he's explaining his life in the previous creation. Right? So in the previous creation, then he's walking around and describing whatever's there, and it's exactly the same as now. He's not saying, wow, it was so different then, and now it's like this. No, it's just the same exact thing. Every age is exactly the same. It's not a slightly different flavor, or this or that, you know. You know, now they wear tank tops. Before they used to wear, but you know, what do you call those? Not buttress. I forget what that thing was. Maybe it was a buttress. Well, you know, in the back they had this big thing in the skirt or, bustle. Yeah, bustles or, you know, I mean, it's always the same thing. There's something that it just adjusts a little bit, but it's the same thing. So you'll get different days of Brahma. They have a theme. So that will be there. So each day is slightly different flavor, like this. But it's exactly the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. You know, it's it doesn't change. So, and what the different flavors are, those are also, you know, within the repetitive. So that's always what's going on. So that's why it says chewing the chew. It means you've already been through this, and now you're coming back. Oh, it's fresh. You know, so it's like that. You know, it's like the crows. You throw some garbage at it. It's garbage. But then they think, oh, something new. You know, and they come very enthusiastically pick through and find something. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 19, ultimately, when Brahma's life is finished, the living entities, are all annihilated and remain unmanifested for millions and millions of years. And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifested. In this way, they are captivated by the spell of the material world. So we see here is ultimately when it's finished. So you have one life to the next. Does that make sense? You know, and what you're saying is that, but then you have the end of Brahma's day. And then there's that unmanifest and then manifest again. Then there's the end of Brahma's life, which then is even a longer span. But then again, it comes back exactly where he left off. So at the end of the universe, when Brahma's life has ended, then one was wound back up to the unmanifest. And then one will manifest again exactly where one left. That's where you'll go back to. You know. So, you know, it's like that. So we have this idea, that thing is, oh, it's new and, you know, we have to engage all these things and all that. They've always been there. In Kali Yuga, there's always going to be, you know, your iPod and this and that. Maybe it's called something else, you know, an ePod or, you know, something like that. But whatever it is, it's always the same stuff, the same situations. There's no difference because otherwise, how would it be just if you're in a situation and you do something wrong, right? And so then afterwards, then you'll be punished for that. You know, end up, you know, whatever it is, you know, a bad situation or, you know, hellish regions or animal life or like this. Now, just would mean you're given the chance to do it right. So there has to be that exact same situation. You know what I'm saying? So same, you know, funky room, same empty pizza boxes, same, all that stuff is there. Right? Now what are you going to do with it again after you've gone through this whole thing? So generally we're a bit dull, so we do the same nonsense again, like that. Slowly, slowly it'll change. You know? But that, even that change is going around in a cycle. You know what I'm saying? So that this Kali Yuga and what's going on now is unique and is so different from the Vedic. No, every time, God, this is what happens. Every time.
And every time people say it's unique.
Yeah, every time they say it's unique. Just, I mean, it gives examples that I think it was in the very end, in the 1890s, I think it was. in I'm not sure if it was America. Yeah, it must have been America, because patents are American, or the whole world, specifically America. So they were seriously considering closing the patent office because they thought everything had been invented. You know, men are so intelligent and so developed that they've invented everything that there is to invent. Like that. So that's the problem. The false ego of the living entity is so great that he always thinks it's unique. You know, that's the thing, is that, oh, but we're Westerners, so we're unique, so we don't fit exactly into the Vedic paradigm, so we have to come up with this whole new system. No, it's just the same old, you know, mleches and yavanas that there's always been. You know, it's always been there. So it's nothing new. That's all. Yes.
In this Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. So it's like it happens every three cycles of the
Buddha? Means Lord Chaitanya will come every Kali Yuga. The avatar is always golden. He'll always teach the chanting of the holy name, the Sankirtan. But for Swayam Krishna to come as Lord Chaitanya, that'll happen only once in a day in a day of Brahma. So that's rare. You know what I'm saying? But every Dwapara Yuga, then Krishna comes. But that means only one is Swayam, the others are Vishnu Murtis. So that means 999 are Vishnumurtis, and one is Swayam Krishna. So whenever Swayam Krishna comes, then Swayam Lord Chaitanya comes. Right? So that way, then you could say it's very... Because otherwise, through the Harinam, then one gets to Vaikuntha. You know, worship of Radha and Krishna, one gets to Vaikuntha. That's why it's not so strange that these Vaikuntha Sampradayas, then they also worship Radha and Krishna, but they see them as an expansion of Vishnu, which technically, you know, what they're dealing with is. You know, does that make sense? Yeah.
So does that mean that only in one out of 1,000 yugas is possible to go to Goloka Vrindavan from here?
Only one in 1,000 is possible to go to Goloka. It would appear that way. So therefore, take advantage. In other words, this is more rare than an Xbox. Like that. Even though it's so unique and so, how you say, absorbing. You know, so all these other things, you know, got to get yourself this and got to do that and... You know, all these things these other kids are so absorbed in, but, you know, that's common stuff. They think it's special. No, Lord Chaitanya, that's uncommon. That's why he said, giving something that's never been given before. Otherwise, it was just given the last Kali Yuga, then why would we say that? Then it's just, you know, he's come to give what every Kali Yuga he gives, you know. But it means once in a day of Brahma, then that's basically, you know, never been given before. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so tell your friends. Like that, you know. Okay. And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifest. See, even Brahma is born again. So you have to understand that there's something beyond this born again. That they're only understanding a portion of what it means to be born again. So in other words, we're the original born-agains, you know, there. In this way, they are captivated by the spell of the material world. But those intelligent persons who take to Krishna consciousness use the human life fully in the devotional service of the Lord, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thus, they transfer themselves, even in this life, to the spiritual planet of Krishna, and become eternally blissful there, not being subject to such rebirths. It's also, even in this life, so that's what Raghunath Das is referring to when he says he offers obeisances to the Brajavasis, right, in Manasiksha, and he makes the point of those who are residing there and those who are residing there by meditation. So even in this life, one can be transferred there. So that's very important. verses 20 to 22. The Lord's abode is eternal and transcendental to the manifested and unmanifested material nature. It is supreme and it is never annihilated, even when all living beings in this world are annihilated, that which the Vedantists described as unmanifested and infallible. The supreme destination is Krishna's supreme abode, verses 20 to 21. Right? So they're talking about the unmanifest, the infallible, and the supreme abode, the supreme destination. That means Krishna's place. That is the supreme abode. Right? They don't understand is that they think supreme, because otherwise, Brahman, how is that an abode? Because abode means something you're in, you're living in. But if there's no distinction, it's everything's all one, how is that an abode? Right? How is that a destination? Because the place where you're at is also Brahman, so destination means you're going somewhere. You know, and if it says the transformation of consciousness, but the point is you end up with no consciousness, so how can that be a transformation? You know, you're at one place, you get to another place. You can't say your consciousness is one, and then you end up with no consciousness and call that a destination. You understand? So they're not applying their own knowledge of grammar and poetry to what they say. Right? It just sounds good, but it doesn't really mean anything. Right? So it's unmanifest means it's always there. We say unmanifest means it didn't appear. No, it's always there. Because something unmanifest manifests. So when you say it's unmanifest, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means it was never manifest. It's always there. Like that. Because they're taking it from nothing, then there's something. But no, if there's something, then you can have nothing. You know? Like that. So you get, this unmanifest that comes from the manifest. It means, it's always manifest, so it's unmanifest. Right? Infallible means nothing goes wrong there. It's all perfectly connected to the Lord, so therefore it's infallible. Illusion means it's fallible. If it's connected to the Lord, it's not fallible. In verse 22, Krishna explains how to attain his abode. The Supreme Lord, who is the greatest, is attained by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his eternal abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated in him only. In this verse, the Lord again emphasized that all our desires should be focused on him only. The same point is already made in verse 14. Ananya cheta satatam yo mam smarati nityasa. So, by always being focused on him, then you'll get there. Because otherwise, the point is, as one may say, well, that's not fair. But the point is, if you're focused on other things, means that's of value to you. You only focus on something that's of value. So, how could you end up just in Krishna's abode if you have other things that you're focusing on? So, other values are there. So, those other values aren't there. So, you have to remain here to be able to appreciate those values. Yes?
We also hear about people who more or less randomly thinks about the Lord, and that it's possible to get lucky, so to speak.
Lucky? Well, it's not exactly lucky, because the point is that why would you remember unless the Lord is pleased with your service? Because we don't hear of someone randomly. It's someone who's absorbed and then may get distracted. Right? And then they may, you know, when things get difficult again, then they take up thinking of the Lord. You know what I'm saying? But we don't hear of just random, just here and there, and then suddenly. It's no luck as such, because the Lord's in control. You have to remember, where does luck come from?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, but even the word luck. You know what I'm saying? So luck comes from the ethnic lucky, right? Lucky is the Bengali pronunciation of Lakshmi, right? So the British picked that up from them. You get lucky. You get Lakshmi. You understand? So it's like, you know, even your luck, it's still the Lord's potency. And so you still have to be, you've dealt properly with the potency, therefore you're getting the results. So it's not just chance. That's where gambling comes. You think, I will get something I don't deserve. That's why they lose. Now, what's the term on, if it comes down to the gambling, between the gambler and, you know, the house, Who wins?
The house.
Why? Is the house gambling?
No, they're
really. It's a proper business. I mean, maybe it may be a sinful business, but there is proper business. That's why they win. Because they know they put in this much investment, this much work, they'll get this much profit. But the other person thinks, I'll do nothing, and I'll get millions. So that doesn't work. There is no such thing as that. You know what I'm saying? It means even you get something you don't know the source of, still, and that means in the past, you did the work, and you're getting the results. So that's why it's such an illusion. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that all these illicit activities, the illusion is greater. That's why they're avoided. You know? By them, it's just business. You know, bad business, but business. You know what I'm saying? Just like the person who is taking alcohol, right? They're intoxicated. They don't know what they're doing and this and that, so they'll do stupid things. They'll do wrong things like that. But the person who runs the alcohol business, it's success because he's doing the right things. So he's not an illusion. The person who's drinking it is. You understand? So we have to make, so it's not just the thing, it's the intoxicating element. So we'll say the whole thing is, no, the other's just business. You know, sinful. You know, you wouldn't want to, you know, be dependent upon that money. That would be very, you know, you're going to develop all bad qualities from that money. Does that make sense? Having described the spiritual world and the process for reaching it in the final six verses of this chapter, the Lord explains the process by which a soul should leave his body in order to attain him. Okay. So verses 23 to 28. Okay. 23. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain the Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God, in the light, in an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. The mystic who passes away from the world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. According to the Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When passes in light, he does not come back, but when he passes in darkness, he returns. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Okay. Verses 23. Devotional service is the topmost yoga. Verses 23 to 26. The Lord describes strict rules for leaving the body pertaining to the Jnana Yogis, Astanga Yogis, and Karmakandis. Verses 24 refers to the Jnana Yogis. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God, in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. The Yogis attain Brahman by the assistance of the 12 Devatas, who control different cosmic phenomena. Light, day, waxing fortnight, 6 months leading to the summer solstice, year, air, sun, moon, etc., as Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport. When fire, light, day, and the fortnight of the moon are mentioned, it is to be understood that over all of them there are various presiding deities who make arrangements for the passage of the soul. At the time of death, the mind carries one on the path to a new life. One leaves the body at the time designated above, either accidentally or by arrangement. it is possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Okay, so, yeah. So all these is that you have these nice material facilities, then you can attain those situations. Why would that be? How can you attain Brahman, which is transcendental, by leaving the body planning at this certain time? What does that indicate? What is the underlying indication?
You are pleasing some demigods.
Okay, you're pleasing some demigods? Okay, means the personal aspect. I was thinking a little bit bigger. But those personalities are transcendental.
Yeah, you would be pleasing Krishna.
No, they're not. So what does that indicate about your goal?
It's achieved by something mundane.
It's achieved by something mundane, so it would be mundane, right? Means if you take an apple and you cook something with it, at the end you have a preparation made out of apple, right? So that's the whole thing, is that, in other words, going to the Brahma Jyoti, even they go there, they will come back. They say they don't come back means they don't come back, you know, as long as we know here. So they're not going to be back in this manifestation. But they'll be back. So it's mundane. Right? So all these elements are mundane because there's a mundane process. But the devotee, it's not by this. It's by remembering Krishna alone. So it doesn't matter. So he gets the benefit that they all get from this, right? This will be coming up. Verse 25 describes the destination of the Karmakandis, the fruit of workers. Those who pass away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or in the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reach the moon planet, but again come back. As the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita 9:21, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas and achieve only. Should achieve, there's no end, right? Achieve only repeated birth and death. Right? So you're seeking sense enjoyment, it's just repeated birth and death. You get the enjoyment, but the point is birth and death, right? Because this is the point of Jaimini, is that you do only good work, you'll only get good results. And because the results go with the soul to this next life, therefore, if you're always very careful to always perform good work, then your good work, good karma, is eternal. So, and from good karma, you'll enjoy. So even you go to the heavenly planets, you come back, that's the cycle. That's just how it works, you know. You go to the, you work, you go to the market, you cook. You know, you buy things, you come back, you cook, you eat, like this, so that enjoyment is there, you know, then you sleep, you go to the toilet, you know, and then you get up in the morning, you go back to work, like this, so it's just the way it goes. Right? So he's taking it for granted that all these other things are fine, as long as you get the results, the good results of your pious credits. Right? But here, in the Vedanta, and that, then it points out is that it's just birth and death. So the element of birth, the element of death, is not considered in Jaimini's, or factored into Jaimini's explanation. You just look at, oh yeah, if I just do this good work, then I'll always enjoy. But what about, you know, death and all the other things that go along with material manifestation? That's not, yes.
He also doesn't consider that every action is covered by fault.
Yes, every action is covered by fault, so there's going to be something either along with it, or because of that covering of fault, you may leave the path. Because we don't hear about someone eternally being situated in karma. They're always going from karma, they're going to move to jnana. And then being frustrated at that, they're going to move to voidism. And then being frustrated at that, they'll move back to karma. Right? So they just keep going around and around. Yes?
In the purport to verse 25, it's mentioned that the souls that are reaching the moon planet will live there for about 10,000 years by demigod calculations. How to understand that in the context that in the consciousness of living entities only 100 years?
But the point is the demigod calculation of years, it doesn't mean that somebody's not more than that. So in other words, it means it's a higher planet, right? In other words, the demigod calculation means, you know, what's standard for the regular demigods. Like, but Brahma, his day is not within that calculation. So that means moon is a higher planet. So still, you're there for 10,000, even you say celestial years. Because otherwise, if you didn't have that kind of arrangement, then someone would figure out, hey, it's just 100 of their years. But it's 10,000. But still, your life is still only going to feel like 100. Like Brahma, he's way beyond the celestial years. Because it means, what do you call it? Yeah, Kali Yuga, isn't Kali Yuga 100 celestial years? Isn't it? No, excuse me. Kali Yuga is 1,000, no? 1,000? Yes. I think it is. I think it's 1,000 celestial years. Dwapara Yuga is 2,000, Treta Yuga is 3,000, and Satya is 4,000. So you add that up, you get 10,000. So in other words, it's going to be one cycle, one Maha Yuga. That's all. You know, so it seems like a long time, but like that. Just, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's still, these are the tricks of the Karmakanda. Is that they, because it's not a bad trick, because the point is, otherwise someone would be in ignorance and be sinful. So better they're in passion and pious than ignorance and sinful. Right? Because someone is ignorance and sinful, you know, or impassioned and sinful, will create an unfavorable environment for those who are in goodness. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, so. Verse 26 summarizes the two paths of passing from this world according to Vedic scriptures. One in light and the other in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. One who passes in darkness returns. Verses 27-28 refer to the path taken by the devotees. You can also take it that the yogis, then they'll pass in the light, and so they don't come back because they'll go to Brahmaloka. And so then they'll stay there as long as Brahma. And when Brahma leaves, then they'll either go back to Godhead if they became a devotee, or go to the Brahman. Like that. So in either case, so... 27-28 refer to the path taken by the devotees. Knowing about these two paths, the devotees are never bewildered. They remain fixed in devotion and attain the supreme abode. Person who accepts the path of devotional service automatically receives the results derived from studying the Vedas. Performing austerity and sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, the devotee achieves the benefits of all spiritual paths. In the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Yeah. So one should understand there's nothing that's lost by devotion, by being in devotional service. Sometimes devotees may think, well, I'm missing out on something. There's something you have to do, otherwise you're missing. But no, there's nothing. Because we can see is how it's been described, how Krishna describes actually the process. What's the miss? You know, if you're worried about missing something in karma, there's karma yoga. Something in jnana, there's jnana yoga. Something in yoga, there's dhyana yoga. Right? So there's it's always connected. Right? But then Krishna's point, thus that's the lower level. Yeah? So the higher level is to be always absorbed in Krishna, right? You have even the yoga system, your yoga ruruksha and yoga rudha, right? So your yoga ruruksha, this is the lower stage where you're engaging your activities in the process to bring you to that meditation, that full meditation, right? So then through karma yoga and jnana yoga, this astanga yoga, all these things will bring one to that position, right? So then, on the lower stages, the focus is on the activities and connecting the activities. Right? The higher stage is simply remembering Krishna and absorbing in Krishna. Automatically, your activities are connected. Right? Does that make sense? So this is the position. So, in the last verse of chapter 6, the Lord establishes the devotee as the best of all yogis. Verse 20 explains why the devotee is the best. By his devotional service, he receives the results of all of the processes and goes back home, back to Godhead. Now, here, even if we say, but the yogi, he passed in the light, he went to Brahmaloka, Then he cultivated, you know, the yoga and connection with the Lord. At the end of Brahma's life, he goes back to Godhead. Okay? So, you know, it may sound okay. But then you have two aspects. One is that, you know, okay, we go to, one would go to Vaikuntha. Great. That's nice. But at the same time, as one has to see is, you know, what's Brahma's meditation? Because that's basically as good as you're going to get. Right? And so, and then the other aspect is how long you want to wait. Right? Right now, Brahma is in his 51st year. He's 51 years old. Right? So that's what's running now. You know, and we're in the 28th millennium cycle out of 72. Right? In the middle of that, in the 14th manu. Right? That's where we are. So that means 49 more of his years to go. Well, the devotee, in this lifetime, he goes back to Godhead. Right? And he attains the supreme abode. So then, you can see, even just by that calculation, it's better. In the purport to verse 28, Srila Prabhupada summarizes the process of devotional service. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee. Because in the beginning of the fourth chapter, it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and fortunately gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service. And this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God. And Krishna's, about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, names, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains a state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. The highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. Okay, do we notice something in the chronological presentation here?
Three stages?
Uh-huh. Yes, Shraddha Prem. The three stages, of course, the neophyte, the madhyam, and uttama. But he went through the details of Shraddha to Prema. Right? It starts. One who has a little faith, right, should learn from a devotee. Right? So when he gains this, when one searches for a devotee, of course he gets the devotee's association. So then sadhu sangha. He actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. So in other words, by the association, somehow or another, he gets the faith in it, and then he searches for it. So once you actually are situated in association of devotees, then the process becomes solid, right? That's it. So the sadhu sangha, that's what he begins to study and understand Gita. So then by that, by advancement in the association of devotee, one is placed in devotional service, bhajana kriya, right? So by that association, one advances, then one seriously takes up being a devotee, takes up the process, so bhajana kriya. By advancement in association of the devotee, okay. Oh, by association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, names, and other features, right? So that means anartha nivritti means getting rid of all this, not just that I'm a rascal and I'm attached to, you know, this and that. That, you know, so that's there, but more important is that we've given up our misgivings towards Krishna. Right, so that's why the thing is Krishna, he'll protect you. One will be, you know, that's eternal. One will be happy there. All these things, because why is one interested in the material world? What are you busy doing in the material world?
We believe it's going to give us happiness.
Yes, we believe it's going to give us happiness. So we're working hard to make a secure situation in which we can be happy. Right? And the devotee is doing that. Right? So why is he doing that? Because he has faith that it will make him happy. So that's actually a misgiving. So when that's relieved, then he understands, no, It's all Krishna. So, therefore, I perform my prescribed duties. And whatever facilities come from the proper performance of my prescribed duties, that's what I engage in Krishna's service. Rather than, no, on my own, separately, I have to engage separate from this devotional process, right? Because I'm not fanatic, I'm being practical, you know? So that's there. Yeah? Yes?
So when the distress and misgivings come, if we just take short of our prescribed duty, okay, I'll just keep on going and I'll weather the storm.
Yes, because nothing else is going to... Because Arjuna is having a problem here. But what's Krishna's recommendation? Perform his prescribed duty. But before he was performing it for himself, now he's going to perform it for Krishna. Right? So, but nothing changed in the performance of his duty. It's not that now he used a different bow or a different chariot or different mantras or, you know, now instead of that he just sat on his chariot and by telepathy then he destroyed everybody. No, it was exactly the same. The duty didn't change. But he's now more aware of his duties. Because before he thought his duty was simply to fight, you know, to for justice, you know, to reinstate his brother. But now it's actually, no, your performance of your duties are to please Krishna. And if you please Krishna, automatically everything else is taken care of. That's why this verse is saying the devotee is not bereft of the benefits of anything else. So because he's fighting for Krishna, then his brother gets reinstated in the throne. That automatically comes. They win a kingdom. They have, you know, unlimited wealth. They have unlimited power. Right? Now all the obstacles in their family interaction are gone. So all that is gained. But having gained all that, still it doesn't have any real meaning without Krishna. Right? So that's Kunti's prayers. Is that, you know, better, you know, we're in distress and you're here. Then we're, you know, now situated knights as emperors and you go back to Dwarka. Right? So that was her point. Is that the real point is, because they've been through everything, is remembering Krishna. Yes?
You gave that the natures are mixed of the individual and one is not like higher than the other. So how can one know what is the prescribed duty?
But why would you say they're equal?
If well, but close. Like but, someone is Kshatriya and Brahmana nature, for example, or Vaishya and Brahmana.
That's not close.
No, I mean that he's not like 80% Brahmana and he has some small 30% Vaishya inclination.
No. But see, the thing is, the difficulty in understanding is you're taking it that those natures are close. So you're mixing the proportion of which with the closeness of them. Because whether it's 50-50 or 90-10, they're not close. Right? Kshatriya and Brahman is. Kshatriya Vaishya, Vaishya Shudra. That's 1 degree. But as soon as you get 2 degrees, then it gets strange. 3 degrees is worse. Right? 4 degrees we don't even discuss. You know? You understand? So you have to understand is the difference in their mentality. Is that one is knowledge and then the other is money. So that means they use their brahminical intelligence to make money. You know what I'm saying? So that means that kind of intelligence is not meant for making money. It's meant for spiritual realization. So that means they're going to become much more absorbed in something than they should be. Right? Now, we're not talking about someone who has a brahminical nature and whose field of knowledge is economics. We're not talking about that. That also you have to distinguish. Because a Brahmin can be an expert in any of the books of Vedic knowledge. So that means he'll be expert in the fields of the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Like you have Brahmins who are expert in music. That's their field. But their dealing with it is still brahminical. Like the Brahmin, he knows the music, he teaches it. He'll sing for the deity, right? He'll sing, you know, for a devotional program. He won't sing for money, right? But if he has that knowledge of the music and sings for money, then that's a mix. Or even better, he'll teach to start a thing to then, you know, have a program in which he can make money. Or he'll make money from teaching. These are contradictory because that's Brahman and Vaishya. Right? So that's where the problem comes, because you don't expect the Brahman to, you know, do like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty.
And if one has a mixed nature of
doing, so one has, if one has a mixed nature, one has to see what's there and engage those elements in Krishna service. That's all. It's still the same thing of karma yoga. Whatever it is, you have to engage them. But you have to engage them within their field. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you don't mix the Brahminical with the Vaishya. The Vaishya, you do business in business, and then the Brahminical, you use it in Brahminical areas. You don't mix them. Because mixes don't work. Because as soon as you do, then they go. If it's 1 degree down, right, means it's anuloma, means with the hair, right, not against. So that means if you have Brahman and Kshatriya, then you'll be functioning at Kshatriya. Like that. Yeah, it'll always take the lower. But it won't be another species, it'll be lower. You know, Kshatriya with Vaishya, you'll get a Vaishya. Vaishya with Shudra, you'll get a Shudra. But they're pure. Right? But it's not ideal. You know, because otherwise your father's one thing, but you have a different nature. So that's not good. Right? Because for the mother, it doesn't matter, because she's going to be a wife and, you know, all that anyway. It doesn't matter what the husband is. Right, so her duties as a woman don't change, just the environment she's in. So she's Kshatriya nature, but she's functioning in a Brahmin environment, but she's still going to act as a mother. Right? But the problem is the son, he's going to have the nature of the mother, but he's not a girl. So he's going to have to act in the environment of his father. But he has a Kshatriya nature, not a Brahmin nature. So that's not good. Right? Kshatriya father should have a Kshatriya son. Brahmin father should have a Brahmin. Because then they can relate. If they're different, it's harder to relate. You know. Does that make sense? One thing, if it's higher, okay, that can make, that's okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Shudra's doing, you know, his craft and trade and selling it and making a little bit of something, but his son is a businessman and making big money. He has no problem. Right, you know, he's a businessman, he's making lots, he's powerful and all that, but his son's a Kshatriya, he's even more powerful. Right, or the Kshatriya and that, he's, you know, interested in Dharma and knowledge and does everything according to that, and his son is Brahminical and that's what he does, he's no problem. But when it's down, it's a problem. Right, so if they're equal, sometimes he may get higher, so they look, but like that. But if it's pratiloma, against the hair, against the grain, then, if you have a Brahmin and Kshatriya, it's something different. It's not one or the other, it's a new species. You understand? Like that. So, even a 1 degree, right, means if even Anuloma, if it's 2 degrees, it's a new species. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's always, 3 degrees is worse, you know. But in Pratiloma, it's always a new species. And that 1 degree of difference there is worse than the other one. So 1 degree of the other one, the ones on this side of 1 degree are worse, right? In other words, pratiloma of 1 degree is worse than anuloma of 1 degree. And then when you mix anuloma and pratiloma, then it gets wild. Right? So when you mix from a Brahmin and a Shudra, you'll get a Nishada. Right? I mean, Anuloma. But a Brahmin and a Shudra in Pratiloma, you'll get a Chandala. Right? And when those two mix, right, especially, let's say, if it's a Chandala man and a Nishada woman, because a Nishada woman, even though it's 3 degrees, the Nishada woman is actually a higher position than the Nishada. So again, it's Pratiloma. Then you get what's called a Antavasayin, which means someone who lives outside of everybody's scene. So even amongst the outcasts, they're outcasts. You understand? So the point is you have to understand is just what you're dealing with. So whatever natures are there, you have to take them in their natural state and work with them. So it's not good to have two or three natures. But you don't combine them. You have to work with them within their thing. Because otherwise, then mixing, it's not going to be good for anybody.
But it doesn't mean you don't do those things. You know?
But the mentality will not overlap. Like if you're a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, you do...
But the Brahmin and Kshatriya, that's not a big problem. Like, unless I said it's the other way, then it's Sutta, then it's more extreme. Like that. Because then you get it's either very good or not. Right? Does that make sense? So that means Puru, he was Kshatriya father, Kshatriya mother. Right? But the other sons of Devayani, then they're Sutas. So they could act as Brahmas, as Kshatriyas, or as charioteers. So they're actually as Kshatriyas, but you can see the mixed nature because they're not interested in helping their father. Does that make sense? You know, so, in other words, the point is whatever the nature, take whatever it is and use it in Krishna's service. Don't worry if it's mixed or not. Right? You know, chutneys are also offerable, but you just have to have the right proportion. Right? It's a mix, but you have to know what how it works. You know, in other words, what is Brahminical, what's this, and don't mix the motives. You know what I'm saying? You know, you want to do business, but you're always giving all the money away. You can't do business. You know. Or you're working in the intellectual area and you want to make money out of that. These shouldn't be mixed. You know, it means you do your studies and all that from that side, and you do your business from this side. Does that make sense? So then, you know, it's clear. It's two natures, but it's clear. Then, and you connect it to Krishna, it'll be purified. Then, as it's purified, one will naturally take up the Brahminical, because Vaishnavas are automatically Brahminical. So it'll eventually come to that. So then, at that point, it's not a problem. The spirit. Okay, so this is Krishna name, form, activities, pastimes, names, other features. So we have to be very clear on all of that. Right? So then all these things, then when there's no misgivings, then it's very easy to be absorbed in Krishna. Right? After these misgivings have become perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study, nishta. Right? Then one relishes. So when it was fixed, then one will relish. Then that's ruchi. One relishes the study of Gita. Right? And attains the state of feeling always Krishna conscious. Right? Asakti. In the advanced stage, right, one falls completely in love with Krishna. So then we're just taking here is, attains the state of always feeling Krishna conscious. That means that between asakti and then going over into bhava. Right? And when one's always Krishna conscious, in other words, that means that you've come to the point of samadhi. Right? Because that's why this would be worthwhile, is that in these chapters they're talking about that. Coming to the point of constant remembrance. So that constant remembrance, that samadhi, that will then bring one to fall in love with Krishna. Right? Or one can take it as that one falls completely in love with Krishna. That means there's a process of falling in love. So that bhava, one is falling in love, but one completely falls in love, so that's prema. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindava. So at that time you're transferred to Goloka. So up to that point, one is dealing with Gokul. Does that make sense? Where the devotee becomes eternally happy. It means you're working on the eternal platform in Gokula, but you'll be there for that one manifestation of the pastime. So after that, one will be transferred to Goloka, where one will eternally continue in that. Does that make sense? Okay. Chapter 9. The most confidential knowledge. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
and the supreme subject of worship, supreme object of worship. The soul is eternally related to him through transcendental devotional service, bhakti. By reviving one's pure devotion, one returns to Krishna in the spiritual realm. Right? So this is what is being described here. Right? These all these little things in between, these are the sangati, giving the chapter what's connecting the last, and then also giving what's the essence, you know, what's going on. So this would be like also the pratigya, right? This is the essence, this is what the chapter is about, right? Then breaking down the chapter, verses 1 to 3, who is qualified to hear about Krishna, 4 to 10, the achinta beta relationship between chit, achit, and Ishwara. 11 to 15, demons, worshippers, and pure devotees. Verses 16 to 25, Krishna is the supreme object of worship. And verses 26 to 34, then the glories of direct worship of Krishna. Right? Okay, verses 1 to 3. Text 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting. It is joyfully performed." Those who are faithful in this devotional service cannot obtain me. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot obtain me, O conqueror of foes. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. So verses 1 to 3, who is qualified to hear about Krishna? Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. The middle six chapters of Gita are the essence of the book, unless they are the essence of the essence. Among the middle six chapters, the ninth and tenth chapters are especially important, and therefore they are the essence of the essence of the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains the progression of the Bhagavad Gita chapters in his purport to verse 1. The very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, is more or less an introduction to the rest of the book. And in the second and third chapters, the spiritual knowledge described is called confidential. Topics discussed in the seventh and eighth chapters are specifically related to devotional service. Because they bring enlightenment in Krishna consciousness, they are called more confidential. But the matters which are described in the ninth chapter deal with unalloyed pure devotion. Therefore, this is called the most confidential. Right? So in other words, the introduction of the book, what's the actual problem, the material difficulties that are there, relationship to the battlefield, Krishna, Arjuna, everything like that. So the field is set. And then the second and third, then you're describing the transcendental knowledge and the knowledge of engaging oneself in activities, you know, in connection with the Supreme. So that's confidential. Right? It means you have knowledge. So knowledge technically means one could say, well, wouldn't the knowledge be more confidential? But actually, if you look at it, knowledge has been given in the second, you know, so that's being refined more in the fourth. But the point is that knowledge combined with action, that's what's very confidential. Because there's action without knowledge and knowledge without action. Right? But here, to take the knowledge, you know, pick the knowledge from the path of jnana, and activities from the path of karma, and combine them, then this gives you something that has never been seen before. It's not something of this world. No one in this world does that. Right? So, that's confidential. Right? Now, seeing how that can be done in relationship to the Supreme, always absorbed in Him as a person. Right? Now that's then taken because what we explained, second and third, is the karma yoga. Right? So these others are finer points of how to develop it further and all that. It means the knowledge is developed, you know, the absorption is developed, all these things are developed. But then the point is because it's him as a person, you're going beyond the process.
right? That you're just going beyond karma yoga, engaging knowledge and your attachment to knowledge, your attachment to activities, but you're connecting to the Lord. So that's confidential. That actually will elevate you. Right? Because people say, well, that's karma yoga. That won't get you anywhere. No, that'll get you liberated. You know? Like that. Karma yoga will get you out of the material world. And because it's being done connected to Krishna, it will start to invoke or bring about the change of consciousness to devotion. It will make you more and more qualified to get into the spiritual world. Right? But Krishna said by remembering him, that's what's going to accomplish that. So that's given in these chapters, right? 7 and 8. So it's him as a person beyond this process that's more important than that connection of karma and jnana. It's the connection that's important. Right? You're connecting karma and jnana, but it's the connection that makes it important. So that's more confidential. Right? So now this is going to be the most confidential. Right? Because this is going to be directly about himself. Right? So unalloyed pure devotion, that's by which Krishna can be controlled. Right? Before this, then Krishna's still in control. Right? But you're coming to the height. But now it's something goes beyond. Unalloyed devotion means Krishna can be controlled by that. That's the most confidential. Right? Does that make sense? Because you can know about him and his pastimes and all that, and he with the gopis did this and that one said that and all these different things and what was in the kunj. But that's just knowledge. But the point is there's a method of dealing with that knowledge that you control Krishna. Just because you have it, it's not enough. So, you know, that pure unalloyed, that's what's going to control. So. 7 and 8 chapters have described bhakti mixed with karma, jnana, and yoga. But 9th and 10th chapters describe pure unalloyed devotional service. Ananya bhakti. This pure unalloyed devotional service has the power to overcome the attachment to karma, jnana, and yoga. So we can see is that when Krishna is explaining one process, he's already taking you and connecting you to the next one. Right? This is the sangati. He's describing the karma, but he's also the element of knowledge is important. Then he'll describe that knowledge and then how they connect them. But that still means absorption in Krishna. Right? Then he's taking all those three together and working those things. And then the absorption is, you know, what's more important. Now he's talking about that absorption, but that absorption is in unalloyed devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So there's always that overlap, because that leaves away. Because otherwise it's so clear on its own, and this is on its own, where's the connection, the relationship? That's why the modern processes of knowledge, they seem to be very, very clear and very simple and straightforward, but what can they do with them? You know what I'm saying? This is the problem. In order to attain... this pure unalloyed devotional service has the power to overcome the attachment to karma, jnana, and yoga, right? Because you're connecting it to the Lord, but you're connecting... Why are you connecting that? Because of our attachment. We're attached to karma, jnana, and yoga. But we're pious. We're willing to connect it to Krishna, so it's devotional service. But now it's being pointed out that this unalloyed devotional service, an ananya bhakti, can get you beyond the attachment to karma, jnana, and yoga, even though you're using it in Krishna's service. Yes.
Although we may be attached to karma, jnana, and yoga, we may not be incorporating that consciousness in our devotional service.
No. If you're attached to these things, you're incorporating it, but because it's connected to Krishna, you're advancing. So the process is that as you're advancing, you're becoming less and less attached to those things. You know what I'm saying? So, but at the same time, you're that field is still comfortable to you. So there's a point at which that is even left. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know.
My doubt was that it says unalloyed devotional service has the power to overcome the attachment to these three.
Yes.
And then, but if you're performing unalloyed devotional service, does that not mean that you've already overcome attachment to these three?
Means, the point is that, means you're performing the pure devotional service. Means, sees you're dealing with these things all the way through, you know, up to very advanced levels. So, in other words, at our level, it'll be more obvious. So it's not necessarily unalloyed. Our goal is unalloyed. So the point is if you want to get something, you first have to have a goal, have it as a goal. So unless our purpose is unalloyed devotion, that would mean then our process and our, you know, how you say, the situations would have to be in connection with unalloyed devotion. So therefore, we'll situate ourselves what's best for unalloyed devotion. We'll do those activities that are best for unalloyed devotion. Right? So that is the meaning when Rupa Goswami uses, I think, the iti. Yeah? Anyavilashita sunyam. Anyavilashita. Kind of kamadhyana navati. So where's the iti? Huh? Oh yeah, anyabilasita ita. So that there it means anyabilat means unalloyed devotion or that in pursuance of. Right? So therefore that will come. So by having that understanding, this will overcome this. Because otherwise if one doesn't have the understanding of unalloyed devotion, you'll have pure devotion. But it doesn't have to completely free one from these things. You know what I'm saying? Because the element is liberation means there's still a desire for yourself, something you want to obtain. So that's why we call there's pure devotion and pure unalloyed devotion. Right? You know, so pure devotion is very elevated. It's advanced. But then there's still more advanced. Is that okay? In order to attain the level of Ananya Bhakti, one should understand Krishna fully. Therefore, in chapter 9, the Lord describes his opulence, Aishwarya, which inspires devotion, Uddipaka, in the hearts of non-envious persons. Right? If God has opulence, then you're inspired. Right? You have a friend, if he gets some good facility or good, you know, something, then you're happy. Right? So when we hear about God's opulence, you know, then the non-envious, then they'll be happy. Like that. So then you see is that whatever it is in the way of karma and everything, it's all there. You know, whatever it is, whatever it is you're looking for, knowledge is simply analyzing how Krishna, you know, is involved in everything, who he is, what he does. Right? So that's simply what it is. It is important to note that the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is meant especially for those who have already accepted Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, it is meant for devotees. If one does not accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme, this 9th chapter will appear to him as something different from what it actually is. Right? You know, it's just like you've accepted the other 9 cantos, then the 10th canto has some meaning. Right? You see Krishna's supremacy, and then 10th canto has meaning. So if after reading the other 8, then the 9th chapter, you know, won't have meaning unless they've been accepted. He's the Supreme. The opening verses of chapter 9 are similar to the opening verses of chapter 7. In both places, the Lord stresses the importance of hearing from Him. The Lord explains that non-envy of Him is the requirement for receiving confidential knowledge. Envy and faithlessness are disqualifications for understanding Krishna. Envy is defined by Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan as the proclivity to find fault even where there are only perfect transcendental qualities. Right? So, in other words, one will find fault in anything. You know, that's the difficulty. You know, so even we're saying, you know, what we were discussing yesterday, the political correctness. But the problem is politically correct means you're pointing out that there's something wrong. So if it's not exactly according to that, whatever you're presenting is wrong. It's not a matter of finding the essence, right? This is not Saragrahi, where someone says something, you know it may be politically incorrect, but you find what's the essence, take that and work with it. Or if they're being politically correct, you find what's the essence. Because they're presenting one thing, who knows what it is, but in a way that it's correct in the political sense, in the social sense. It's not that what they're talking about is good, just like ethnic cleansing is politically correct. Right, that's all. But it doesn't mean it's good. So it's being taken that political correctness is good. No, political correctness is a tool. right? It's a vocabulary tool. It's a way of presentation, right? That's all. But it doesn't mean that what you're presenting is good. So the point is whether it's politically correct or not. The point, what's the essence? What are they trying to say? What's the purpose? That's Saragraha. You get to that, then you deal with that. Does this make sense? So then one doesn't find fault, right? Otherwise, one will be finding fault. Spoiled by this wrong attitude, even the most erudite scholars write on Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they are envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. In verse 1, Sri Krishna says that because Arjuna is never envious of him, he is instructing him this most confidential knowledge and realization, which will relieve him of the miseries of material existence. The words jnana in verse 1, vidya in verse 2, and dharma in verse 3 refer only to pure devotional service, which consists of 9 angas: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains in his commentary, the actions of bhakti such as kirtan arise from chit shakti, the energy of the Lord, which manifests spiritual knowledge, and can be thus considered knowledge. In addition, jnana literally means that by which something is known. Since the Lord is known by bhakti, bhakti is called jnana. Right? Okay, so here's this special kind of jnana, right? So now we're still discussing in the relationship to these words, jnana, vidya, and dharma, right? This special type of jnana is different from the well-known jnana described before. The jnana described in the first 6 chapters of the Gita is in the mode of goodness. It teaches that we are not the material body, but the spiritual soul. The jnana described in chapter 9 is beyond the modes of material nature because it reveals the spiritual activities of the soul. Right, so here, jnana means your knowledge or means sambandhigyan of your relationship with Krishna. It means the actual active relationship. The other is your relationship, meaning from the field of non-activity. Right? Means from Shankarshan, that this is the field. Your soul, God is God, material world is what it is. This is your natural relationship, right? Of being a servant and this and that. One is not supposed to be attached to material energy. That's for Krishna's service. That's that. This is what we're talking here. But this jnana, now Krishna is saying that this knowledge is beyond that. This knowledge is then the knowledge where we're dealing with Vasudev. That means Vaiko. Means, yeah. Prajumna Aniruddha and Vasudev. We're doing the aspects that we inspired in that to serve Krishna as a person. That service, that offering of everything. That's also there on that other level. But its focus is more on that knowledge and that application, the results connecting. But here it's a matter of Krishna as a person, just relating to him as a person. Does that make sense? It's subtle, but it's significant. Right? Otherwise Krishna wouldn't have made the distinction. Right? So therefore this jnana will mean that. Right? And then vidya means that knowledge, so these two go together. Jnana literally means that which is known. Right, so kirtan means you're discussing the knowledge, and then, the process of discussing that knowledge which makes everything, by which something is known. Right? And then dharma means the natural duty of the living entity in their natural relationship with Krishna. You have the generic that he's servant of God, but then there's the element of serving out of that personal, you know, relationship. If we are mistaken about our identity, sambandha, we will also be mistaken about our activities, avideya. Simply to understand that a living entity is not material is insufficient. We must understand our original position as Krishnara Nitya Das. Action based on this perfect knowledge, spiritual activity, is work in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because otherwise, you may know the identity that, you know, we're not this body, we're the spirit soul. Okay, one may be able to see Brahman, but what is one going to do? Right? In other words, one's just going to see the Brahman aspect, okay. But that's not complete. Right? it's not sufficient. Because what will one do? One will just appreciate that. And that's all. That's the Brahma body. So it's not enough. You have to understand that we're not the body, but we're servant of Krishna. Then it becomes dynamic. Then you're bringing into the play Paramatma. You're engaged in activities. So that you're engaging your activities with the karma, jnana, and yoga. But then there is then him as a person, Bhagavan, beyond that. You understand? So, in other words, we've gone through the stages of understanding the soul. We've understood the stages of engaging the soul is servant of God, therefore is engaging karma, jnana, and yoga in the Lord's service. Then he's going beyond to directly dealing with the Lord in devotional service, right? The field doesn't change. But one you're dealing on the Brahman platform, one you're dealing on the Paramatma, and one you're dealing on the Bhagavan. Right? So now, in this process, as we are working towards that dealing with Krishna's Bhagavan, so that speeds up the process, because otherwise it's a bit slow trying to go through without that understanding. So that means the process doesn't change. It just means it makes it very quick, because now we know Brahman is Krishna, Paramatma is Krishna. But the mechanics stay the same. So our engaging of our material propensities in Krishna's service, that remains the same. Right? But we go through these natural stages. Yes?
Maharaj, can you please explain how these three different levels of different consciousnesses of how we're working, the progression, is related to Brahman, Paramatma, and
okay, so it means the progression with Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan means that you understand we're not the body, we're the soul, and we understand how Krishna's energies are working. So we're appreciating that, but that's the Brahman platform, right? Then you understand I'm servant of Krishna, therefore I should be doing activities, because appreciating the Brahman, there's no activity other than appreciation. Right? It means, of course, there's something, but it's just you're just simply, the intellect and the mind are just appreciating. It doesn't result in a practical change. So then now when you're dealing with Paramatma, then means I'm servant, so therefore I'm taking up these activities. I'm engaging all the activities that I'm dealing with, right, of this world in connection with the Lord. Right, so your activities, the karma, the jnana, and the yoga, are connected to the Lord. Right, but still, the point is I'm taking karma and connecting it. I'm taking jnana and connecting it. I'm taking jnana and connecting it. Right, but Bhagavan means the soul is the servant of God in a natural relationship. Therefore, it doesn't require karma, jnana, and yoga as the medium. Devotion is the medium. You know, that's the expression. Then karma, jnana, yoga is simply mechanics of how it's expressed. You understand? It means the other one is the karma, jnana, and yoga are important, but those are connected to Krishna. The other one is the relation with Krishna is important, and they're being used as the medium. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in the second verse part that is explaining, then one can practice bhakti yoga without faith.
Without faith.
In the process.
No, he's saying those without faith aren't successful.
In the purport. He's saying that some of the devotees, they practice chanting and so on.
Yeah.
But they don't have faith in this process.
Mm-hmm. And then?
So my question is, because it says also adav shraddha in order to practice the process.
Right, but it's how much faith. The point is also there's a definition where prema is mature faith. Right? So if we're saying we can't pick up the process without having full faith, that means prema. Prema is actually the final definition of faith. Right? So anything less than that means the faith is less. So in other words, there's enough faith to change from having your focus just on material activities and material association to take up the association of the devotees. Right? By that association, one's faith increases. Right? That increased faith in the association of devotees will mean one can take up the devotional process. Right? So that's bhajana kriya. By practicing bhajana kriya, one is purified. Right? So one's faith increases, so then one is able to give up any misgivings that one has in concerning Krishna, his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So then when giving that up, one's faith is greater. One becomes fixed in devotional service. Right? From being fixed, then one's faith increases, one gets a taste. Right? That taste, then the faith increases, one gets attachment and moves into to bhava and prema. You understand? So the faith is developing. So it's not just faith and that's it. And then no, because also along with that, the faith is going through. The association of devotees is getting better. The practice of your devotional process, bhajana kriya, is getting better. Your being fixed is getting stronger. Your taste is increasing. Your attachment is increasing. Right? Your ecstasy is increasing. So all those, as it moves you to the next level, it's also included. And it increases also. But faith is the first one. So faith will be the most developed. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
When we develop ignorance, it's by different amounts of false ego being added.
Yes.
So it sounds like the way to get out is to add
You understand the point? Means in the creation, then in the Sringa Purana, as it's explained, that means we hear in the Bhagavat Purana about how when the Lord glances, He glances, and in that glance of the jivas, there's time and there's false ego. So that false ego is the catalyst which then takes pradhan and transfers it into mahat. Right? When you add false ego again, another dose, so now you have a second dose, then false ego comes out. Right? Then, you know, when you add again that false ego, then intelligence comes again, then mind comes again, then ether, like this. So when you get to earth, that's the maximum amount of false ego. Right? That's why the maximum amount of false ego is manifest according to your identification with the matter around you, observable matter. Right? So it's making the point is that if you're going to remove that, then you have to real ego. You know, and that real ego is then I'm servant of Krishna. So as that faith in that develops, then that starts cutting this material process. So the devotee, therefore, is not actually, he's maybe situated in the material manifestation, but he's not in the material world. Because there's no false ego. If there's no false ego, there is no material world. The material world is based on false ego.
To function in that level, he needs to know that he has a true ego. He needs to be in that place of true ego. And the mood, what does he do?
The mood. So that's the thing. He has to have knowledge and he has to have the mood. So the point is to properly understand the knowledge, you have to have the mood. Right? So, therefore, where do you get the mood from? From association. That's why it's said that only those associated with devotees actually get the faith. That's why you may have enough faith to take up, but unless that faith is matured, then this knowledge in the ninth chapter won't make any sense. Right? Or one can just take up studying Gita like the empiricists, but they get nothing from it. You know, maybe a little bit, something here and there inspires them, but they'll never actually understand what Gita is about.
So in that case, our mood comes from Guru and Parampara.
Yeah, from Guru, from the Parampara. It means that potency is coming down from the Parampara. So anybody in that Parampara can connect you. Right? So by association with anyone, like we discussed many times, for most devotees, who brought you in contact with Krishna consciousness, that it changed your opinion about, you know, your existence, that you took up seriously the contemplation of devotional service. You know, it's a good chance it could have been quite a neophyte devotee, possibly even an uninitiated devotee, right? and that, you know, in that way one came in contact, you know, because they're out distributing books or magazines or doing something, and you meet them. So the point is the potency is there. So if that works with the neophyte devotee, then why wouldn't it be working with more advanced? You know, sorry. So it's that association. You catch that mood. Then the faith comes. Then you take up properly associating with them. Right? And then from that, then you take up the process that they follow. Right? So association is always, that's what moves everything also. Because as it is, it's association that started it. It means that from the devotees you get the mood. And it's from association of the devotees that you move through all these stages. So by the association of devotees, your faith increases. So therefore, you come to Shraddha, and you contemplate it. So that means then you take up the association, it increases again as Vachana Kriya. Right? So, but then we kind of stop the process here and think that, you know, Ruchi and all those things are coming from something else. No, they're coming from the association of devotees. It's simply that process continues. Does that make sense? So that mood is coming from the devotees. So you have the knowledge, so we're studying, but we have to have that mood. So when you have the mood, that's your chit shakti. You know, is the proper understanding. Is that okay? Yes.
It says that the actions of bhakti, such as kirtan, arise from chit shakti, but can it be also understood that they come from kladini shakti because of the transcendental bliss that they award?
No, but then that awarding, that's another thing, that's your experience of it. Means it as an activity, it is the proper knowledge or that which gives that knowledge, that's chit. The environment in which you're doing the kirtan and experiencing that bliss, that's sandhini. So, you understand? The three aspects so that we, you know, understand, but in the application is just going on all nicely together. You understand? You know, so it's not that, well, Haladini is better, so I'll bring everything to there. No, that's... The point is that the chit and the sandini are serving that hladini. Because when chit and hladini are combined, that's bhakti. Right? So in other words, that proper knowledge, that proper activity for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, when that's combined, that's devotional service. Otherwise, if you have knowledge and activity, it's not devotional service. Right? If you say, I'm just going to please Krishna, but you have no knowledge and no activities, so the two are combined, that's... Then you get realization. Sandini gives realization. Right? So in other words, from that field and all, you get realization. Because you have that, and then you look into the field and you see, oh, that's what it means. You know, because you get the realization through observing the field, by working with the field. So Sandini gives the realization. Because realization is your existence. Who are you? Or everything like that. So that's Sandini's existence. Is that okay? This knowledge about the spiritual activities of the spirit soul is the king of education, the most secret of secrets. It is the purest, and because it gives the direct perception of one's constitutional position, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. So Krishna is giving here this knowledge that he's going to give to him because he's non-envious. This is the best of all knowledge, best of all education, because then you actually know what is the spiritual activity of the soul. That he's before taught, you know, how you say, education. Because if it's not about the soul and about God, it's not education, it's ignorance. But now this is the king of education, means now how to take that knowledge and use it in a relationship with God. Right? Because otherwise, you may take this knowledge and, you know, just use it for your own purposes. Then, you know, it's knowledge. But, you know, you're using it for elevating yourself and this and that. Nice. But then you're connecting it to the Lord like that. So then it becomes that beginning stage. But now this is that, how that can be connected to the Lord without any other tinge of anything else. So that makes the difference. One may say, well, this is a fine point, but this fine point makes the difference between you know, even the spiritual platform, Vaikuntha, Dwarka, you know, and, you know, Vrindavan. So, therefore, fine points are good. Like that. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll continue. Today's, what, Friday?
Yeah,
Monday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.